It's the last episode of the Monty and Wolf Show for the spring split. We will be taking a break for MSI before we return for summer. But Wolf, we got treated to an absolute banger of a finals, a rarity in Korean League of Legends, because almost all finals are just 3-0s.
Yeah, I think it was the first time in almost 8 years that we had a 5-game finals. So I was very happy. Everyone was pretty happy that it ended up going to the 5th game. I think everyone was really just super hyped about the venue. Venue was awesome. And I feel like the individual plays in some of the games were a little bit off. You know, I feel like it wasn't, not every game was created equal. You know, not every game was the same quality as the others. But some of the gameplay that we saw, including in that final game, was really insane in terms of the individual micro moves and some of the stuff the players were doing, the decision making, the clutch factor, you know, things like this. So I had no idea that we were going to get an amazing finals like this. I mean, coming into the playoffs, we were like, all right, well, Gen G wins probably 3-0 against almost anybody. You know, that was a pretty overarching theme that everybody had. We didn't expect that Hanwha was going to lose to T1. That happened, so they came back again. They did it again. They did it to KT last year. Now they did it to Hanwha. And then, you know, at that point, I was like, all right, well, I do kind of believe that T1 could win this finals. Like, I did feel it's almost inevitable. I didn't predict it, but I was like, anything could happen. But I still thought, okay, Jane's going to win. And then we go into the series, and it looks like T1's going to win. It looked like they're going to win. It looked doomed. It looked over. I was like, wow, I guess they are going to win. I guess they are going to stop Gen G finally. What an insane series it ended up being, though. And Canyon coming back on the Kha'Zix, which nobody believed. Like, all three of us looked at each other.
It wasn't even good. And then they drew a ban for no reason. That was very exciting.
Brendan, you know, he was casting the finals with me and Mal, and we often like write notes to each other and stuff during the games. And, you know, I was so focused on the draft, and right before we went into the game, when the fans were doing the chants, when we were casting the draft, we were like, yeah, I'm not 100% sure if this is going to work out, blah, blah, blah. And he just grabbed my arm and he's pointed at his paper, and he just had written on his like draft paper, 3-1. And I just looked at him and I was like, I nodded, and I looked at Chronicler and he nodded, and we were like, oh no, it's not going to be 5.
But it was fine. It turns out, it turns out, Wolf, that even if you draft a composition with no crowd control and no engage in a Kha'Zix, as long as the enemy runs into you one by one, Kha'Zix actually does things.
True. If owner does get caught in the river and gets flowed, he will die. And he did die, in fact.
I mean, I think it was kind of a hilarious pick. It wasn't as hilarious as the ban coming in the next game, which was one of the most hilariously confusing things ever, when Keen is arguably the best Cassante player in the world, and he's back in the comfort zone, as it were.
Yeah, that was
and you just let him have that.
That was kind of our feel on that one. And Keen won the 5th game through it and got his first trophy through it. So Canyon got in their heads a little bit. And ultimately impacted how that last game was going to be played out. And the Zac pick is obviously really strong, but if you give Keen an opportunity to pop off on the Cassante, he's going to be ironclad in that last game. And I mean, Keen had a pretty fantastic series overall. There were some, you know, some mistakes on the Rek'Sai game versus in the first Zac game, but overall, I was pretty happy with his performance. I know a lot of people were saying that Chovy definitely should have gotten MVP. I think Chovy was...
I agree with that, but...
I think Chovy was pretty consistent, and his Aurelion Soul was very series defining. Even though they ended up losing the first game of it, it definitely had a huge impact. They arguably should have won that game. Then he made some wrong calls. It seemed like it was his call to push topside, and then getting caught in the brush next to the Baron pit because they wanted to see if they could set a trap there, but ended up being Faker, gets the flank off and takes him out. But he had a fantastic series too. And the bottom lane for Gen G surprise, surprise. Was it first All-Pro worthy of Hayes' performance we saw in this best of five? I'm not 100% sure if I would say
What are you talking about? What are you talking about, Wolf? In game three, when they drafted a composition that was Rek'Sai, Sejuani, Grasp, Azir, Aphelios, and Lulu, and it just screams, yes, Pays, you are the carry. We are peeling for you with a big old tank line. And then he doesn't carry. Are you saying he's not good?
I'm saying I think Viper's better than him.
Now, I will admit, I agree with that. I will admit that his team didn't help him and they didn't play in a way where they were peeling for him. In fact, you know, in some of those later game team fights, they were trying to all in the back line and then Zayas was just jumping on top of Aphelios with no peel and Kumayushi was full culling into Pays with no peel. So he didn't get helped. This is true. And so we can make an argument as like whether Gen G was playing this composition properly as a team, but it doesn't change the fact that Pays is now just Ghost 2.0 and he is not the main character of this team. And the team doesn't play like he's the main character because his teammates know he's not. And so we shouldn't be making drafts where he is the main character and we shouldn't be feeding Pays the delusion that he's the main character either. All of these things can be true.
Yeah, I think so. I think Lehens looked a little frustrated this finals. He also had a bit of a tough one. I think he was not happy with how the lanes were going. He left Pays out dry a few times and went for roams mid where there wasn't
his
any
first
Annie pressure.
Game was garbage.
Yeah. It was. I wasn't a big fan of how he played that one out. And he just in general seemed a little bit lost. And didn't want to be grouped up with Pays. You know, Lehens has had his moments on comms and stuff that we've seen in the LCK where he's scolding Pays and yelling at him and stuff. And I think he's not entirely ready to trust Pays yet. As a player who can, he wants to babysit so he can be the late game carry. And that was interesting to see it in the microcosm of this series as well. Just some of the decisions that Lehens made. I mean, I think we could talk about Faker's performance as well, which was, you know, overall fine. You know, it was not, he wasn't really the main character. It was really Owner's good performances in the series that brought T1 to the brink of winning it. And Zayas being overall a stronger top laner than he has been in other best of fives and finals we've seen with this roster in the past. But we do have to talk about the Rift Herald play. Which,
the Rift Herald incident of game five.
I mean, that play, I mean, yes, I don't want to take anything away from Keen, but that play felt like it was what cemented Gen G lifting the trophy. Like at that point, you know,
they were probably going to win regardless of whether he did that or not, but it certainly didn't help.
Yeah, it was at that moment we all, you know, looked at each other thinking, I think it's done. Like I think it's happening. Like Gen G is winning this finals. It was just a very bizarre decision that, you know, I haven't like VOD reviewed it, but we obviously saw it on the cast, and then we saw it a second time. Just not a decision that you could really explain. We've seen Faker have these moments in the past in finals with like fingering a stopwatch, for example, on the Ahri a few seasons back and stuff like that. End up costing you big, and Gen G, on the other hand, you know, punished him very quickly with a poppy. That is very common to do when the Rift Herald comes down. So, very bizarre decision there. You could see, I mean, moments like that made me really feel like you could know the pressure that both teams were under playing in a game five in this finals in front of a crowd that was. And I've heard the venue holds 10,000. I've heard it holds 15,000. I don't know how many people were there, but it was
full. A lot. I mean, I was there, so
yeah, it was full. The crowd was insane. It's the biggest venue I think that I've been in since I joined the LCK. Like that was the biggest audience we've had. It was just huge, and with Silver Scrapes, and when you see the players walk out onto the stage as well in a venue like that, they're like ants, you know, like it's so huge, there's so many people, and they've been to big venues in the past, obviously, like, you know, Faker has lost world finals, he's lost one in the game five very recently, You know, they've been exposed to pressure like this a lot. But again, some of the decision making did sometimes feel on both teams across this series like you could tell this really meant a lot, and the pressure was so high that sometimes the decision making went a little bit awry.
Yeah. And, it, you know, look, Faker almost came back in game number one with the Azir play that he made, even though that was also a misplay by Genji, who didn't feel like finishing the Elder with Kalista and three players on T1 dead. And they decided to, you know, go into an Azir choke point. They still obviously didn't expect to be quadra killed by Faker there. So, you know, credit to him. So he almost saved that game in a way, by punishing the mistake that Genji made. But yeah, I mean, in those critical moments, it is disappointing. He didn't think Poppy was going to be there, clearly. And so he went in on the Rift Herald, but they don't even get the turret as a result. So they just don't trade anything. So yeah, it was a little bit underwhelming that final game, but I think people will focus on Faker's mistake, Wolf. And they won't actually look at the fact that Zeus was like solo killed twice in lane, which was really the much bigger problem, was the giant Cassante that developed as a result of that.
Yeah, the Zeus solo deaths were really rough. And, you know, dying with passive means you lose your passive. And so you're not going to have that for larger team fights or skirmishes later on. And it really did feel like, you know, once King got the first solo kill, he was in Zeus's head, and he wasn't really bailed out at all either. Owner was always on the wrong side of the map when King was looking for the solo kill plays, so that was a huge problem. Chovy's package usage was really interesting as well in that final game, and the package that he went straight into mid, where he just basically all leaned into five people, and they had to follow up, and they're like, well, it's mobile Zeri. If he does enough damage, Zeri will just clean it up. They can't kill Zeri. And then Keen also just continue to follow up as Chovy like rotates out, and then Keen walks in and just is a huge front line for Paze. That fight was, it was, if you like told someone how it was going to happen before it happened, even if they knew that it was a pretty fed Zeri, they might question like, would you really want to do that with the package right into the mid lane, right into everybody else? But it was a really smart play with the way T1 were grouped, and they were able to win the fight super clean. And close out the game. And I was, you know, really, really surprised in that moment and also really impressed. And Chovy is just so smart. His team has built up a ton of synergy very quickly, obviously across one split. There's still some question marks about Paze on the Hens, but the top half of this team is on the same page. Very, very clean gameplay. Those three members, King, Canyon, Chovy, were super important, super instrumental individually of their win. Canyon's Kha'Zix, which, yes, mistakes were made by Owner, but that's what got them back into the fifth game in the first place. Very, very fun series. Very different play styles between these two teams in terms of the bottom lane. Paze being the scaling guy. Guma only plays pushing lanes. That kind of stuff that we talked about a lot came true in this series as well. Guma tried to play the Zeri. Didn't work out. You know, that was a really, really fun aspect of this series as well. Playing his second Zeri game of the season in the finals in the best of five. Pretty insane the ways that you could, you know, talk about, does T1 get their 11th win? Does Genji get the back-to-back-to-back-to-back, the four-peat? Four-peat's kind of a working title. I don't know if that's what we'll end up ultimately calling
that, that is technically correct, so.
Yeah. I thought that the series couldn't have been more hype. And I don't know if Hanwha actually had beaten T1 that it would have been. You know, maybe the bottom lane would have been more interesting, but you know, I don't know if it would have been as good of a finals. Just based on
I think what makes the T1 game so exciting is that T1 is never really down and out. Like they can see the angles that, you know, to achieve victory within these games. And you really saw that in game number one, where they were cross mapping, and they've always been, you know, for the last couple of years with this roster, they have been the best Baron team in the world. They see those angles for deceptive Barons, in different ways, depending on their team composition, from over the back wall, playing around Vision, playing around TPs. And they really did abuse that a lot through these playoffs. I mean, we saw that in the Hanwha series as well, because Doran made several misplays, which opened up T1 Barons. I mean, in two games, one game he got caught on the top side, and the other game he was in bot with no TP, and he just gave up T1 Barons, and those were the big factors that swung those games in T1's favor. And, we saw that again here. They will cross-map you. They will create picks. They will try and go for these Barons. They will punish a lack of teleport. They're just, with Faker's shot calling, they're extremely good at these kind of situations, and they see gaps in the game to take that Baron that nobody else sees. And that's what you love about them, right? And they made this series really compelling and almost won that game number one in a game that really felt like it was almost unlosable for Gen.G. Gen.G's macro was wonderful in the early game. The way they were swapping the lanes around, it was just extremely well done by Gen.G, and Gen.G had a pretty solid grip on the game.
Also, game three, or was it? No, it was game two. The Aurelion Sol game where Chovy ended up getting super big and ended up being, he had like nine, he was like 9-1 on Aurelion Sol. The game where he popped off and got huge, even though Paze was basically irrelevant on the Varus, he, made the choice to try to start roaming and trying to make impacts in side lanes and stuff like that. And that's the kind of game that T1 is so good at. You start trying to be like, oh, well, I'll try to look like I'm going in with one and then rotate over some of my team and play these scrappy games where it's hard to know how many numbers are coming and how fast can my team rotate to fight these. T1 is like, that is what we've been doing for 2 years. And
yeah,
they ended up killing Chovy, right, and shutting him down. And the when the fights got scrappy, T1 was clearly the better team at those moments. And that's kind of like what T1 is as a roster. Strong early game, sitting up the bottom lane pushes, they dive, they constantly fight skirmishes around early dragons, and in the late game, they make these bold decisions, like Faker will push all the way to an inner, clear some vision with the jungler, and then have a bait enemy teams into a team fight where they'll turn it around very quickly. Even though you know the rest of T1 is coming, you're not entirely sure how fast they're coming, can you win this, and then you end up losing it, that kind of the gameplay. And Gen.G opted into it a lot, and T1 looked way better there. When it came to like pre-planned setups on objectives and some individual performances in lane from the solo laners, that's where Gen.G was the better team. Like Chovy and Keen really were the difference makers, and they were able to defeat their lane opponents in the overarching series in a significant enough way to bring home the trophy. And ever since Chovy won that first title, man, he doesn't lose them. Paze, same story, wins his first trophy. He keeps picking them up. Now you've got Keen picking up his first trophy. how many trophies and is not team only that, get?
I mean, it's also that Keen picked it up and was the carry in game five. I think that's the most surprising thing, is that Keen is a player who has been known for choking, not just internationally, but in domestic playoffs as well. And so as somebody who is a huge Keen fan like myself, it was extremely encouraging to see him be the difference maker in the fifth game of this series when all the chips were down, right? That to me, I hope finally signals a change in his play style and more confidence.
Yeah, I think it will. Because obviously in his most confident in regular season, when the pressure isn't on, he's insanely good. And I think now that he's already won an LCK title, maybe the next time he finds himself in an international best of five, like he will soon at MSI and in future LCK finals, very likely, that pressure won't be the same, because he knows, he's already got a title. He already did it once. He can do it again. That was the thing for me. Keen didn't ride the bus, He took this series into his own hands and won that first trophy. Because oftentimes you have a player who isn't as well known as a lot of his teammates. And I know it's crazy to say, because you and I talk about Keen all the time, but I think in terms of the 10 players on the stage, Keen's probably like bottom three in terms of how famous he is, his notoriety. He hasn't won a title. A lot of people will, be like, well, the good players carried him, but I'm glad he finally got a trophy. That kind of mindset often does pop up, especially with top laners, because, we have seen a lot of metas where top lane isn't the carry role, isn't the one that really is the most impactful. But there's a reason why we keep getting top MVPs. And Doran was also robbed last year of getting MVP by Paze as well, but that's another story for another time. I really do feel like Keen, he made that game five his, and you know he deserves to like have his emotional moment on stage, and before even getting the MVP award, you know, he had his emotional moment on stage, and the crowd wanted him to get it, and yes, there were some Chovy robbed comments, but I knew going in it was going to be either Chovy or Keen, and I was going to be happy either way.
Look, people did it, the Keen one, for the narrative. I think Chovy, when you actually look at the way he had to play this game, like the fact that he's winning all of these lanes that he absolutely should not win, especially because Faker's playing not just Azir, but Hail of Blades Azir, and he's like doing extremely well. I mean, Chovy's a just massive at the moment. And I think he was less flashy because he didn't get the solo kills in the final game. And I think a lot of people just vote based off of recency bias, right? Keen wasn't as good kind of in the middle of the series. I thought he had a very good game one on Rumble. Very good. But his Rek'Sai wasn't quite up to, you know, some of the plays we've seen from Doran on that champion throughout these playoffs. So that left me a little bit underwhelmed, but his Kassante games were very good also. So I think the Rek'Sai just kind of drags it down for me. Meanwhile, Chovy, I think, was absolutely huge. He was the only reason they had a shot really to win game number two with the Aurelion Soul. He's doing great things with the Corki in lanes that are going to be really tough for Corki and coming out on top. So big credit to him. Also, I mean, they let, you know, it was a bold gamble to let the Orianna through in this final series. I mean, everybody was banning Orianna versus Faker like all playoffs. And in game five, to let that champion up was really bold of Chovy, and he showed why it was okay.
Yeah. And he's done this so many times on Corki too. Like he's almost getting solo kills and stuff like that in a matchup that normally you're trying to rush back and get some MR and build that Hex Drinker and survive. Also his Aurelion Soul laning. Aurelion Soul seems to me, in the hands of, you know, the best player in the world, should just be so broken in what it can do, because
it is.
Early laning actually is strong. If you know how to play,
yeah, like the first couple levels are very strong, yeah. And then it kind of takes a dip. But I mean, you can get enough of an advantage off those first couple levels to be meaningful, like a pretty big HP lead.
If you end up getting the stacks in quickly and off of those first few levels, as you mentioned, then you can avoid some of the all-in timings that your lane opponent gets, because obviously one of the weaknesses of Aurelion Soul is that when he presses Q, he's channeling and he's actually immobile, with the exception of when he's in flight, obviously. So you don't have the ability to farm your combo and get the minions down quickly unless you build stacks really quickly early, and then you can kind of always just have enough to burn through those minions so fast that it's really hard to be punished. If you know the timing's really well, you can actually then push the waves in before you can be all in by your opponent. If you can continue to harass and push them out of lane, as Chovy did to Faker, then you're also a huge roaming threat who gets W resets, so his flight resets when he kills people. And then you can actually just be a monster mid game team fighting champion before you become even the late game scaling. I press W, or rather press E and Q. And put up a huge circle on the ground and everybody dies inside. You can just turn the river into a black hole. And I think Aurelion Soul is going to be a huge champion at MSI. I think teams still haven't really even abused it that much. Like, and if you compare Bulldog's Aurelion Soul that we saw from him earlier this season to Chovy's, it's like night and day, the difference in impact. It's actually insane. Chovy, so good at this pick. I'm surprised Faker didn't show it to us. I really thought it was coming. I thought he was going to play in this finals for sure. Just so strong. Suits T1's playstyle as well, with how well you can roam with it.
Yeah, it's also, Wolf, that, this isn't like a recent adoption by Chovy either. He was actually on the Aurelion Soul before it got nerfed, I believe. Had a couple games on it over the course of the regular split. Let me just look real quick.
He definitely did. He also played one in playoffs as well before this.
Yeah, he played it versus Fear X on February 24th. So, I mean, he absolutely was one of the earlier users of this champion. He also played it versus Brian on March 22nd. But this was, you know, this matchup that he had, and like he was preparing this pick for a while and experimenting with it. Yeah, not in the most important matchups, it has to be said, right? But still, like, getting wins on this champion, showing it very early. And it has been, I think, and APA, obviously, for Team Liquid showing this off also, but it is a much more important pick over time. And I agree, it will be a major pick at MSI for sure.
It just does so much. I mean, the Empowered Ultimate as well, with how large its AoE is. I mean, you could do so much with it. I mean, obviously, the knockups are the key and most critical part of it, but the slow from the extended ring, and you could even use it to secure kills if somebody gets super low and they try to escape. You could just stop backs with it as well. Like, if you're trying to control an objective and the enemy team is trying to back, or you have a backdooring champion and they're like trying to back away from Elder, like, okay, we're not going to fight the Elder, we got to defend the base, and you just drop that ultimate down and stop four backs with it. It's actually insane what it can do. And crazy to me that T1 didn't consider it to be a power pick here in these drafts, just considering how good Faker is at picks like this. It suits his playstyle, it suits the team's playstyle. Just a little bit disappointed that T1 didn't play it, and well, at the same time, very impressed with how Chovy did on the side of Gen G.
Yeah, and you know, looking at the series holistically, we talked about this in the course of LCK history. I know, I think the last time I was in this particular arena, Wolf, was the KT versus Rocks Tigers Summer 2016 finals, which was the last finals in League that I cast. Which was another game 5 banger. That was the one where Score missed Smite on the Baron at the very end of the series to help Rocks like seal the victory. It wouldn't be another couple of years until Score won his first title. So, you know, I don't know. This arena like makes good game 5s, I guess. For those of you who remember, it was used when the 2014 World Championship happened in Korea. The semifinals were also played in that arena.
That KT Rocks finals was Peanut's first best of 5, if I remember correctly as well. I was watching back some of the finals to get ready for this finals, and I was skimming through that one, and I'm pretty sure it is the same venue you mentioned. It's a sick venue. I think it's been rebranded since back then. But it's still a really massive arena. And there's like a really nice park outside. It was just a really good place to be.
It used to be known as the Olympic Gymnastics Arena.
Yeah, that's right. I think I might have cast the StarCraft finals in there as well at some point. It was definitely not fully opened. Like, it was a section of that arena for the StarCraft finals, but I think I cast the StarCraft finals in there at some point. But yeah, it's a great venue, and I think we should talk about the fact that, you know, LCK still has two road shows a year, has the, you know, massive venues that they've been taking, sometimes taking it outside of Seoul, obviously sometimes keeping it in Seoul, getting these huge venues, and still maintaining OGN's kind of legacy of having the finals opening video, Caster Jun's opening, doing extravagant opening ceremonies. And the impact that makes on telling the storylines of the teams, and how amazing it is for having those big crowd shots. Because if you had the same Gen G finals with T1 in a, you know, in the LCK arena with 450 fans, it would have just not had the same impact. Yes, it would have been hype still. Yes, viewership would have been pretty good still. But I do argue that build up is what reminds people the LCK finals is happening. Because that's when everyone starts posting on Twitter about, like, oh, did you see Caster Jun again? He's doing this and this and this, and, like, this is amazing. And like, that was sick when the players came up on the stage. You know, the platform rose up, stuff like that. It builds the tension. It builds up so much. We get to talk about a ton of history during those moments as well. You know, we had a really awesome pre-show with all these fans around, right? And I think that that legacy that, that OGN started, you know, so many years ago, that is still, you know, respected and carried out by Riot in the, you know, modern LCK, is a tradition that I think other regions should, you know, emulate and not cheap out on, because I'm not saying every region can get KSPO Dome, and then it's really expensive and it's obviously not necessarily going to fill in some regions for certain finals, but I think that trying to get closer to what we have now instead of using local arenas is probably going to be what's going to make your game long term a legacy game that lasts forever, right? That's why it's so big in Korea. We do this and people get hyped. It legitimizes it. You don't go, oh, I heard there's that finals happening in that small arena over there, you know, with a tiny audience.
Yeah.
You go, oh, there's a huge stadium filled with people.
Right. Well, before we continue on this and I give my take, Wolf, I do want to take a moment to thank Factor for sponsoring our show. You guys can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. They're fresh, never frozen, dietitian approved, and ready in just 2 minutes. There are 35 options every week, and of course, they rotate. You can get calorie smart, keto, protein plus, vegan, vegetarian, whatever you like. Also, guys, you know, they deliver them to you in a box that's chilled, put them right into the refrigerator, and then you can just eat them throughout the week. So it's cheaper than the takeout that you've been ordering, for sure. Also better for you, most likely, depending on what you're ordering via takeout. But let's be realistic. You're not making the best choices. Nobody orders takeout to make the best choices. No. Yeah, exactly. So this is a way that you can eat healthier while still being just as lazy as you like. I'll be using this myself when I'm back in the States in May. Excited to give it a try. So if you guys want to help us, and again, the best way to support our shows at Last Free Nation is to support our sponsors. You guys can head to factormeals.com/MontyWolf50 and use code MontyWolf50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code MontyWolf50 at factormeals.com/MontyWolf50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. And this is the same company that does HelloFresh, guys, which I have used and really enjoyed when I was in the States. And I think one of the most convenient things is, like, it's very easy to just reschedule, skip a week if you're on vacation. They make it very convenient and flexible for you. So thank you very much to Factor. We hope you guys enjoy as well.
Thanks so much.
As to your points, Wolf, about the arena and everything like that, I can just tell you, because you got me and my wife tickets, and like, there, I hadn't been to a Korean final since spring 2017, and I wasn't casting that league final. I was just in the audience for it, because I was just about to leave to head back to move back to America at that point in time, and I didn't cast League of Legends in the 2017 spring season. But what I will say is that, you know, there is a magic to Korean finals. Like, there is a pomp and gravity to it that is unrivaled. And I mean, you and I know this. This is why we came to Korea in the first place, is because this is the home of esports and it's treated very seriously here. And it feels epic in a way that even big events in the West can't really compete with.
Yeah. It's something where, because of the traditional aspects to it, like, it's not unique every time. Each aspect of it, like the opening video, the opening itself, these types of things, the player intros, where the players come in, they stand at a certain place, or they rise up on a platform, or they come down from the ceiling on another platform, these types of things, like, those are unique every time, and sometimes they're a little bit rehashed. But my point is, the formula is exciting. Like, you know what to expect. You're like, I can't wait for the opening video, and you know it's coming, and you are not going to miss it. And the trash talk as well. You know the formula, and it's because it's a proven formula that everybody likes. And at this point, it's tradition. So to change it up or to get rid of even one aspect of this would I think just so much be a gut punch to the fans, right? And also, like, the way in which this is run is what, to me, gives League of Legends this massive legitimacy in Korea, with these big venues and these incredible ceremonies, it reminds you of, you know, obviously a much smaller scale, but like the Super Bowl or something like that. It reminds you that this is a sport in Korea. And when you see people walking around outside the venue, as I did, a lot of people are like, you know, older people who don't know what's going on are like looking it up or asking people like, what's going on in there? Like, is there a sporting event going on? And, you know, then if you want to search it, like, it's trending on Twitter. It's like everywhere. Everybody's talking about the finals, right? It's just so big in Korea. Every person has like taken their night. They're like, I'm not going out with my friends. I'm ordering chicken. There's always a thing in Korean fans. Like, I'm ordering chicken. I got my beer. I'm ready to watch the LCK finals. And there was a huge meme when we had that big giant pause a few years back when the power went out at the venue. Everyone's like, my chicken, though. Like, I had this set up. And it's just such a... I mean, everyone who watches this show probably has seen... I mean, not necessarily everyone, but I'd say a majority of people watching the show have seen multiple LCK finals, whether it was from the OGN days or obviously more recently. And it probably means something to them, too. And it's probably something they look forward to a lot, you know, twice a year when we do have this. And the other regions don't have it. I know, obviously, like, America is big, and it's hard to you know, make the same sort of impact happen on a larger scale, like, bigger country, larger population, etc. Europe is a bunch of different countries, right? And if you only focus on the Berlin area to try to get a large crowd, it can be quite tricky, right? You know, are there even necessarily that many people who would go to a venue that size in Germany? I think, you know, depending on the finals.
No,
maybe.
I mean, what you do is you put it in France or Spain, obviously.
But I think there is a way to slowly build up to this by doing larger venues and kind of slowly stacking up. And yeah, maybe just put it on a roadshow, go to another country. And obviously there are some logistical problems, but that's the good thing about the EU, right? Like, you know, you can do stuff like this relatively easily. But I think trying to slowly get to where the LCK is what needs to happen for these regions to have these big finals that can match the viewership numbers and do big things. Because if we don't, then those regions will never catch up and the finals will be less meaningful. I mean, LEC already has three splits now, so the finals are almost feel watered down in a way, and then you have these finals.
Oh, well, they have three splits, and then they have the season finals afterwards. I am a fan of the LEC format, but the thing is that I don't think it's a format problem, Wolf. I think it's a scope problem, like you're saying, where if you don't actually make the finals feel important, because people complain about that. But Wolf, when I was casting in Korea, we had three seasons. We had winter, spring, and summer. And it was, I'm telling you guys, it was hype, even though we had three seasons. But the reason it was hype is because there was a build into something epic, whereas this doesn't have that. So I don't really think it's a format issue. I think it's a presentation issue.
Yeah, I'm absolutely in agreement with you. And if you have the format plus the lackluster, you know, finals, then, you know, obviously you're going to have people complaining about that when they watch the LCK and LPL finals, which are just on another level. I'd say the LCK finals is still, you know, much higher level than the LPL, but the LPL is getting there. I think the LPL is taking the proper steps to get closer to the LCK in terms of that. And the LPL also is having, you know, multiple studios that they operate out of. They have kind of a traveling show during the regular season.
Yeah, they have like home system. Yeah.
I mean, they in a way are like living the Overwatch League vision
exactly
within their own region, right? So I think that like the LPL in terms of scale, they're building an infrastructure to where if League is still the top esport in 10 years, like they've kind of built it up to be massive, like to even grow further with the infrastructure they're setting up and the risks they've taken to try to expand the game. And I really do think there are enough English-speaking fans in the world, in Europe and in America, to where if there is, I think if the stakes are raised and, you know, you can set up for these big finals, the people will come. But if you never invest in it because of the fear that it won't work out or just feeling like it's not important, then I can tell you it definitely won't. Korea never had to do this because from the first finals, the first OGN champions, they had massive crowds in these venues. They didn't have to like go, well, we'll do a little small one like StarCraft 2 for a little bit and see what happens. You know, we didn't get to the Brood War level right away, but like, you know, the League of Legends finals have always been very big, and I think it would be, you know, hard. I think it would be hard pressed to imagine a future of LCK if this scales back, because that's the moment it like crashes down and the fans are like, oh, it's dead. The game's dead. The game's dead. Dead game. No,
it's not going to scale back, Wolf. I'm not concerned about that from the LCK's perspective. Like, this is obviously very successful. I mean, the tickets actually sell for a decent amount of money in Korea too. So I doubt this is as much of a, you know, losing money endeavor as it is in other places. I think, for example, the tickets to this venue or to this event were like 60,000 to 80,000 won, which is like $50 to $70 approximately, guys, which is like, you know, that's quite a bit of money, especially when you're filling a stadium that can, you know, it was filled to the fucking brim. You know what I mean? So I'm pretty sure they actually made money selling tickets here, which is often very different than Western events where they lose money because they can't sell tickets for quite as much cash, right? But they also sell out instantly in Korea. So yeah, I mean, it was really successful. I think those tickets sold out in like 1 minute. The capacity of this arena is 15,000.
Yeah, so yeah, people did say
it's bigger than I thought, and it was jammed, guys. It was every seat was full in there. It was crazy.
It was insane, and it's just one of those things that like that's what got me emotional in that finals. It's not actually like Keane getting his first title. I mean, that made me feel something, right? But I was actually just watching the crowd nonstop, especially during the opening ceremony, and just feeling like, well, I never thought that I'd be casting a finals like this. Like, I never thought that esports was going to, you know, still be this big and still be this relevant, bigger than I thought or really could have imagined when I was casting in my bedroom, you know, like 14 years ago. So I mean, there's that. You know, you and I were both in San Francisco for the World's Finals. We weren't in the audience, but you could see how big that arena was. And you know, it's one we've seen LoL Finals in before. Just how huge this phenomena has become. And I think that it can be, if it's hyped up correctly, like it doesn't have to be World's Finals to get a bunch of people in America to go to a venue. I think there is like some work that needs to be done in terms of like why LCS viewership is poor and why everybody's like, oh, it's a bad region. I don't want to watch it. I don't care. I mean, I think there, if marketed correctly and done differently, you can make it super interesting and super exciting. I mean, like, look at CBLOL. Okay. Is that region going to be competing with the LCK? No.
It's bigger than LCS now.
Yeah. And the fans are super hype and they fill arenas. Like they have finals with massive arenas. Like they fill those. They do that. Like that's to me a region that knows and supports its teams and doesn't care if they're not going to necessarily beat Europe. They want to see who wins their title at their domestic league. And I think the near airport memes haven't done LCS any favors in terms of just, you know, kind of how the region has been for no reason just shat on by fans all the time. Because obviously they're not as strong, and they will hopefully develop over the course of the future. But I think that there is a world where, you know, in 3 years' time, if this isn't tried out and viewership declines, like there are no road shows for these regions at all. And like that's a future I don't want to live in. That's a future I don't want the fans to live in. So I'm hoping that people can see the LCK finals and not go, well, we'll never be that. I'd rather people who are running these go, I hope we can one day obtain that. What's the path? What's the goal? What's the way to get closer and closer and closer to that?
Right. I think what is exciting is that it is a mix of the known and the unknown. Like you say, like, you know, the hype video is coming, you know, the trash talk segment is coming, you know, Caster Jun's like stage introduction is coming. But what's unknown is like how they remix these elements. Like, what is the theme of the hype video and what are the player introductions? And in this particular final, I thought the way that they did things with the flags was super cool. Like, they got professional. It looked like they got professional like flag teams in there. To do all of the, you know, flag, the complex flag twirling. And then on top of that, it had like this cool technology element, because one of the other things that Korea has consistently done is like really pushed new tech. So not only has there been a lot of early augmented reality within that, you know, it's much more commonplace now, but it kind of showed up first or very early on within Korean esports. But they had these like LED flags that I had never even seen before, that I didn't even know existed, with like the T1 and Gen G logos on them. And then in the audience, they had those radio controlled lights, right? So it would change the colors. Like, and you guys probably couldn't see this on stream, but like when T1 was being introduced, the entire stadium was red, and then people were holding balls that it said T1 in white, you know, every so often on the crowd. And when Gen G, it was gold, and the Gen G logo was made out of the people holding, you know, the little light balls, so that you could see like the Gen G logo. I don't know if that came across on stream, but it was extremely cool in person. So it really just feels like they show you things that you have that I had never seen before, especially at a live venue. So it's this kind of interesting use of technology or creative introductions for the teams and players that are unexpected, while I'm still getting all of the stuff that I know and love from previous finals.
Exactly. Like, you know that something hype is going to happen and when it's going to happen, before it happens, you don't know exactly how it's going to happen.
Right.
And that's my least favorite part about rehearsals for these finals, because you get to see a lot of that stuff and you're like, oh, well, now I know it's going to happen. But the funny thing is, when you watch the rehearsal, you have stand-ins and stuff like that, and, you know, it's not actually real. But when it happens live, like, always when I watch a rehearsal, I'm like, oh, but now I know it's going to happen. But when you see it live, it's totally different. It's, like, actually real.
Yeah, and
the fans in the arena, it's so sick.
And here's the thing that I think that the suits don't understand at the top when they're making these decisions, because the budget cuts have been real. Remember that during COVID, guys, when everything was locked down in Los Angeles, LCS rented the empty Greek Theater. The Greek Theater is an iconic outdoor performance space in Los Angeles, and they rented it just to have a sense of scale. Even though it was entirely empty, it still looked really fucking cool, and it made you feel hype because everyone was stuck inside and you're looking at this Los Angeles icon that has the LCS finals, and they have all these, you know, shots of the hills and everything like that. It really made you feel like it was in LA, and they were willing to do that during COVID, guys. And now they're just not even willing. They get the singer for Rise to like scream it kind of awkwardly in a studio with very few people in it. But I think what the suits are missing is that what makes a sport is not the competition. You know, the Super Bowl is just another game of football. You know, the World Cup finals are just another game of soccer. What makes a sport is the wrapping around it, right? And it's the hype that goes into it, and the narratives and the history and the production value. That's what really makes it epic. And if you, like, to your point, Wolf, if you start peeling that away, you just are going to lose fans, because people come here for the hype. And if they're not getting the hype, then who fucking cares?
Yeah, if there's no hype and it's just another game with top pros in it, like, and you don't fully understand, if you're not even like that in tune to the strategy, you could just go watch your favorite League of Legends streamer instead. You know what I mean? Right. Like, you have to really be plugged in. And that's why I really enjoy the story and history stuff that we do, that I feel like other regions don't do as much, where you talk about, oh, it's the last time we had this best of five, or the history of best of fives between these two teams. And you even see, like, you know, the SK Telecom logo and not the T1 logo, because they respect that back then it was SK Telecom, now it's T1, and stuff like that that we do that respect the history of these teams and give you a real feeling of the scale of how long LCK has been around now and how much history it has, because it's the longest running esports tournament, and it is just so crazy that I guess I thought about my, I guess GSL is like slightly longer, still running, but second highest. But yeah, it gives you a scale of how long this this league has been around and how important this has been, like 30 plus times. Like we had these moments have happened, you know, and how cool that is. And it makes you want to go back and watch some of the old ones. And I often regularly do before I cast the finals to go back and pick just sometimes the finals from the same venue, but sometimes also just like randomly click you back and be like, yeah, let's go 2023 spring. Let's go watch that finals and remember what it was like back then. And it's just so rad. Now we have 2024 is one of those historic finals that people will be talking about for years to come. And I'm super lucky I got to be a part of it. I'm glad you were able to come as well and see it in person. And it's a finals people will be talking about for a really long time. And, you know, it builds up the hype for MSI as well. I'm just super happy that, like, everything went well. There were also, like, no technical issues, no pauses, no BS. It all just was a great finals. And I hope I could say the same about some of the upcoming LEC and LCS finals in the next, you know, year or two. Maybe we'll see a ramp back up because I think those fans deserve it too.
I think only if the Saudi Arabian government is paying for them will that happen, because Riot just doesn't get it. I mean, they just don't. It's a line item in a budget that they're cutting to save money, and they don't understand that by doing this, they actually are unraveling the fabric of their leagues. They don't get it. They don't.
But
get
if you
it
do
all.
That, if you do that, if you're willing to do that, then why are we doing esports? Don't do it.
Because they don't understand, Wolf. They don't. You think John Needham understands this? He doesn't. He doesn't get it. He doesn't get anything, Wolf. So no, it's not going to change.
I want
the Saudis pay for it. Because here's the thing, ESL gets it. ESL gets it.
They do. They do get it. I mean, if you look at what they've done with their Counter-Strike finals over the years,
that's great.
That's the kind of scale that like ESL and DreamHack have put forward in the past. Like they know where people like where the hype is, how to make people excited. And they're like, I mean, don't get me wrong, like the world's finals in 2022, like Riot got people excited. Like that was a hype setup and the opening and everything was really mm-hmm. awesome. Like they can do it. They know what to do. They know how to do it. They just sometimes seem unwilling to do it or afraid to do it.
They kind of know how to do it. I would say nobody does it as well as the Koreans.
it's way lower in terms of how hype it is and how good it is compared to the LCK, and I'm not saying like everyone has to be as good as the LCK. What I'm saying is I know they're capable of making a smaller scale, but bigger than they're doing now. Finals happen.
Riot's problem is that they will throw more money at it, but they throw money at the wrong things, which is that they don't actually do it. It's not a focus on the players and hyping up the match. It's just like, here's a fucking augmented reality KDA Ari dancing around in front of your face. And that to me is bullshit. So I would rather see, I don't know, the players, trash talk, history of the players, hyping up the players. I think that's more effective in the long run.
Agree.
I want to switch the conversation, Wolf. One last topic that we have to touch on briefly, because I tweeted this and I want your take on it because you come from StarCraft. So I said, is Chovy now in consideration as the second LoL Bourgeois? And Bonjour is a word that was applied, guys, to 5 StarCraft Brood War players that basically signified kind of a universal acceptance of a period of dominance by these players. And in order of their ascension to Bonjour status, they were Boxer, Nada, I Love Uv, Savior, and finally Flash. And now, I mean, I think that we're talking about Chovy now with 3 different rosters winning 4 out of 5 finals in the last 2.5 years and 4 of them consecutively. And people will point to a lack of international success for Chovy. But I mean, there was no international scene in StarCraft Brood War, to be very clear. It was basically only Korean domestic competition.
You know, You don't count when like the Koreans came over to WCG and Artosis tried his best
and massacred everybody. Yeah. So I'm just curious what if you think this is a reasonable conversation to have, because famously, you know, Faker kind of received the old OSL bourgeois throne back in 2014. So yeah, he ascended rather quickly because it was actually 2014 winter finals that they gave him the bourgeois throne. And that was actually only a year after his debut. So in essence, it was actually quite quick for Faker. But I think we agree it was deserved. It was deserved. And I think everybody would say that Faker is a bourgeois, right? Is that yes, fair?
No, absolutely. No doubt. He has eclipsed Flash's legacy and has for a while in terms of how successful he's been over the longest period of time. Though the tough question to me about whether Chovy can be in contention for bourgeois is that he has won the last four finals in a row. Obviously, the four-peat, he got it. 4 to 5 finals. But, you know, has Genji been incredibly dominant because of him so long and so much so that you can't... Basically, we talk about the same mid laners we see in every finals. Faker, Chovy, BDD, Showmaker, right? Like, these are... This is always posted on Twitter. Like, Fionn's out there. He's like, did you know the last, you know, LCK finals only been this... He's like, it's another finals. It's the same tweet I'm posting out there. But like that in itself, and the fact that Chovy has not been a standout where he's still compared with players like Faker, especially, means that I'm not sure if it's time yet, because Faker is still competing with him. The series we've seen between them are very close, especially this fifth one. I think if Genji shows up and Chovy pops off like he did against Hanwha and they 3-0, you know, I'm a little bit more convinced, but I'm still not ready yet. Just because Faker is still so relevant, so close to him, I don't think anyone's going to argue that Faker is better than Chovy. Like, no one will argue that. Chovy is definitely the best mid laner, definitely deserved his MVP that he got for this season. But the difference in gap to where when Faker got his bourgeois title in 2014, when he was considered the bourgeois with him and everybody else, I feel like Chovy and everybody else is not quite there yet. Like, it's almost there, but it's not quite there yet. Because to be a bourgeois, you have to be so much more dominant, so much better than everybody else, that it's not even a question. Like, if you can question, is it time? I always say this about bourgeois. If you can say, is he a bourgeois? Then he's not a bourgeois, because it cannot be in question. Like, it cannot be in question.
I mean, what's the conversation if Chovy wins MSI?
If Chovy wins MSI and is by far the best mid laner there and then wins, you know, summer, then I think, yeah, get the guy needs a chair. Maybe if he wins MSI, like, Riot will get him one. They're gonna put in the opening. I think they put like Mata or somebody in the bourgeois chair, and everybody got really mad a few years back. So I think they're a little bit wary about using the bourgeois chair. But I mean, they might be getting it ready. I don't know.
Yeah, I think this is a super realistic conversation that we need to start having, because I agree with you, Wolf, that it's not there yet. But I think we're close. I think we're close. You know, the golden road is now on the table for Genji this year. It doesn't seem super far-fetched that could be a reality. I think Chovy, even though this finals was close, I think he was significantly better than Faker in this finals. And then as far as the other Genji wins, I think he was a lot better than Faker. I mean, look at last summer, dude. Like, you know, last finals was not close. Faker was coming off the injury, but I think a lot of the other finals, it was even more convincingly Chovy. So, you know, Chovy's in a really interesting state, and especially because we do have to have, I don't think he underperformed at Worlds last year. I think his teammates did. I do think he underperformed at Worlds 2022. I do think he underperformed at MSI, last year, but this roster, you know, if they can see a shred of international success, you know, I think the question is, even without international success, if Chovy is just a player that doesn't travel or compete internationally well, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not a bourgeois, because if his level of domestic dominance is so thorough and his average play, people will argue against it because they think like, oh, the average level of play, you know, they don't watch the regular season games, but if he's just crushing everybody and winning fucking every domestic title, like, I, you know, I still think he can achieve it.
I think absolutely regular season games apply to this. To me, it's you've got to be the best player in your tournament by such a large margin that no one else is close, and then you just get it. And you don't get to actually, like, here's the thing people don't understand about being a Bonjour. You don't get to go, yeah, well, like, is 2022 2023, though, we're not that good, so I don't know if he really is. No, it's in that moment only. Like, if you were in the course of one season, you could become a Bonjour. Like, Bulldog could become a Bonjour if he actually, in one split, like, was so much better than everyone else, and people were being mind-blown, and everybody's like, oh my god, this guy's the best mid, I don't know what happened, but he is way better than Chovy, he's way better than Faker, he's getting, you know, three solo kills a game. That could happen, right? Like, it, because to be a Bonjour means you are the undisputed best, and there is no challenging it. So if you go back and go, well, I don't know, Chovy's his Worlds wasn't so great, so I don't know if we, that's not what it's about, actually.
You could argue that if Zeka had slightly, you know, if Zeka had continued his world streak, like, that might actually be a legitimate conversation as well, as crazy as that sounds. The problem is that Zeka peaked in, like, one patch, so we're not going to, like, hand that out. But if he did continue to have a level of dominance and, like, his glow up was more permanent than it ended up being, or he wasn't just a ridiculous patch Zerg. It is also harder, obviously, to have this conversation in the context of a team game. But I mean, Faker deserves it because we've basically seen him throughout all his iterations with entirely different teammates, including a lot of whom were just, if we're being real in retrospect, fucking bums that went on to do absolutely nothing after playing with Faker. Or retiring and being giga overrated as a result. I mean, I can say this now because I've seen what a team where Faker suddenly exits look like. We were given that gift last year, and I will tell you, a lot of those T1 players, mega overrated.
Yeah. I mean, it was Poby. He's my GOAT, but he's he's not LCK ready. To me, also, just because, like, I would not say, you know, a lot of people would say, okay, the Bonjour era means, like, you sit on the throne until someone else takes it, so Faker is still, like, a sitting Bonjour now. But I don't think so. Like, I think that you can be a Bonjour until you stop dominating, and then there could be no Bonjour. And to me, that's how I look at League of Legends. Is the last, like, 8 years, we haven't really had a Bonjour, because Faker's performances weren't, during that time, so much better than every other mid laner's that, like, he was a Bonjour. For those of you guys who weren't around when Faker debuted, it didn't see the stuff that he did. I wasn't casting League, you were. But I saw clips every day on Twitter, on Reddit, of the solo kills he was doing, his LeBlanc plays, and how he changed the game. And you could see that, and that's like what a Bonjour is, where no one is doing the things that you're doing. You are so much better than everyone else. I mean, that's the Bonjours you just listed for StarCraft were that as well. Like, Slayer's Boxer changed the way the game was played. Rules were added to the game because he would do stuff like put a minefield down and then go into the game menus, set his opponent as an ally so that his units wouldn't automatically target them, let the units walk over the minefield, then go into the menus and turn it off so the mines would explode, which then became banned because it was actually so broken. But no one was thinking about that stuff, and he was like, no, I'm actually just going to use the rules of the game against you. He used to also chat with his opponents as well and get in their heads in-game, which was also subsequently banned. And, like, he was just super smart, right? You know, he wasn't known as one of the most mechanically gifted players, but early on in esports, like, that's often how it goes. Mechanics rise as people learn how to train properly, as games develop and more talent comes in. But the thing about Chovy is I think he is on the cusp. Like, I do think this conversation needs to be had, and I think it's a good discussion to have. And if he, to me, MSI, if he wins MSI, like, it does help his... It does help the conversation, but I think domestic is way more important, and I think we need to see another dominant summer from him. And if he could do that, then, you know, maybe it's time. And who decides whether someone's a Bonjour or not has actually often been the production company who puts the throne there, and that's when you know, like, everyone's already talking about it, but when you sit on the chair, that's when everyone has to accept it, right? And I think that's a big responsibility for Riot.
Do you ever, especially because it comes from a non-Riot game, like, they may be reluctant to do it because the legacy comes from Blizzard, right? Even though that would be a stupid reason, If anything, they should seize it away while they have the opportunity and make it their own, would be my argument, if I were evil. Like
the Bonesville concept?
Yeah.
I feel like that's, to me, like, I don't really associate that with Blizzard, and I think that there may be a larger reluctance because it's more of, to me, an association with OGN.
That's fair.
And the comparisons, obviously, people make between OGN and the current LCK were, there were a lot of people who were very unhappy in the early days. Obviously, the OGN was no longer going to be producing the league, but I think Riot has, you know, eventually done well enough to where a lot of people either forgot or they don't care, or they don't know anymore. I don't think that is as sensitive as it used to be, but I think in the early days, just kind of copying OGN was something Riot was like, oh, we definitely don't want to do that. They definitely did in a lot of ways because that's what the fan expectation was. And I wouldn't say copy, but as much as we were talking about earlier, honored the tradition of the OGN finals and stuff like that, opening videos, etc. But I think that last time they did the Bonjour, I can't remember who it was. I want to say like they had like Modest in it and like Faker had to earn it back or something like that. It was really weird. And fans really didn't like it. And both Western and Korean fans were really mad about it. So I think there might be some reluctance there. But I do think, you know, maybe we can start the conversation. Maybe we start talking about this. This goes to FM Korea because they've got their eyes on us now after all pro shenanigans. And maybe this becomes a larger discussion in the Korean community.
Do you think the Korean community talks about Bonjour still?
I looked into this when I was doing a lecture a few months ago, and I was explaining the concept of Bonjour, and I was looking up footage and stuff. And most of the comments talking about Bonjour and the throne as well came up in regards to people reminiscing about StarCraft 1, which was quite interesting because I searched a lot of Korean forums to see if I could find cool images. I was wondering if there was going to be, like, you know, maybe some photos of some of these players like I Love Uv on a throne that wasn't, like, in his opening videos that OGN made. I'm talking about the title videos, guys, but I just thought maybe there'd be some promotional material, maybe some posters or something that OGN had made back then that I just hadn't seen. So I was trying to look into that, and I was searching, you know, Bonjour, I was searching throne, and, you know, some images of Faker, especially when he first sat on the throne, and some of the finals openings where he sat on the throne on the stage came up. But there hasn't been as much discussion in terms of recently Bonjour, and I think that's probably because, like, the last big discussions I saw about it on, like, DC Inside and FM Korea were, like, back in, you know, 2016, 2017. And also there was the outrage about the you know, the throne thing I was talking about earlier, which I don't have the exact what year it was or who it was. I'm sure someone in the comments will know, but there was some discussion about that. But I think it's just because people haven't felt like there is a Bonjour in the LCK for a really long time. Like, I don't think people thought Showmaker was one.
No.
Because Showmaker was the only other person who had a dominant
or Canyon. Play.
Yeah. The Showmaker, you know, he had the 2 years where he was, like, playing Lucian mid all the time and no one could stop him. But it wasn't the level of performance I think people were ready to say, like, he's the Bonjour. And he was so reliant on Canyon, and Canyon was so reliant on him, so wasn't one individual player necessarily during that dominant era for Dom 1. So I want the conversation to be had, though, because I think it's fun. And even though I think you and I both are, like, we're not quite there yet, like, we're on the cusp of it potentially for Chovy. And that's a fun discussion to have.
I did enjoy how people got angry at me on Twitter for just asking the question and not giving my thoughts on it at all. Because, like, I personally don't think it's there, but I do think that it's a fun conversation to start having. And, like, what would have to happen for this to become true? But people are very touchy about this.
Yeah, no, I mean, people should be, though, because it's...
I agree. It's fun.
It's a thing that if you give a Bonjour out to someone who doesn't deserve it, then you destroy the term, basically. You know what I mean? Like, you can't actually just be a Bonjour to some people and not to others. Like, that's just not how it works. Like I said, if it's a question, then it's not time yet. But then if you just go, well, I think he's a Bonjour, and he's a Bonjour for me, like, he's my Bonjour. suddenly it's a Team Liquid thread, like, he's my Bonjour, like, Marine King Prime is actually the one. But, like, yeah, it dilutes, like, what the meaning of Bonjour has been in the past. So you have to be careful with the association. But you didn't say, like, Toby's a bourgeois, well, like, that's it. So I don't know why anyone's mad. That's weird, but...
it's the internet. People get mad over anything.
They certainly will. But yeah, I'm going to, right now, as we speak, I'm going to go retweet your tweet. I want to get the discussion going. I want to get people talking about this.
You just got to incept it into the Korean community now. Because I actually am curious what the Korean fans would say about Jovi's current performance.
Yeah, definitely a conversation that, like, going into summer season, I'm going to start pushing. Maybe I'll start tweeting about it in Korean as well and see if we can get some discussions from the Korean fans as well. Just because it's, I don't know, it's one of those things, like, we talked about the formula earlier with the openings and, like, is it going to be a video? Is it going to be a really sick moment where the players come out? Caster John's going to yell really loud and the fans are going to go crazy. There's going to be a trash talk video, etc. That kind of formula. It's just things that people know and it makes them hyped. People know the Bourgeois chair. They know Bourgeois, and then if they see it again, they're like, oh my God. And I think it might even, like,
I was casting that final, the winter 2013, 2014, when they busted out the Bourgeois chair for the finals. For Faker, and people fucking went mental. It was crazy.
Yeah, and I think that's what you got to do. Also, if you're Riot, like, a lot of people are really scared. If Faker leaves, viewership goes down. It will. But what if you could have, you know, nobody could be Faker's successor. Let's be real, that's not going to happen. But you could at least have Chovy be a new main character type. Luckily, yep. I don't think we have to say goodbye to Faker anytime soon because he's still very on form. And he also has a Asian Games gold medal, so will not have to ever worry about military or anything like that. So, just saying, though, what if you had two Fakers? What if we had sisters? What if you had two? What if you had two T1s and two Gen Gs? Like, hold on, Riot. Like, you're squandering the possibilities.
I mean, I was actually surprised at the number of Gen G fans in the arena. It was, like, pretty 50-50 between T1 and Gen G. It feels like Gen G's fan base is really getting pretty big in Korea. Tons of people there with Gen G, you know, jackets, jerseys, merch. Like, it was pretty evenly divided in the arena. I didn't think Gen G had that big of a fan base.
Yeah. I recommend, guys, some of you watching who do not know what a Bourgeois is, go back and watch the 2014 winter finals opening video. Like, just intro. Search on YouTube, search the intro. And search some of the StarCraft.
It's the one with Imagine Dragons Radioactive song.
Yeah. And you'll see it, like, the theme is, like, very, like, almost sepia gray color.
Yeah.
It's very, very cool opening. One of the most iconic League of Legends openings of all time. But yeah, go search that and search some of the StarCraft ones and you'll know, like, what we're talking about. Because I think a lot of people watching the show actually don't even know what this term is necessarily, because it hasn't been used very much in recent times, because no one in League of Legends has really been close to when Faker was a Bourgeois. And so, like, that's why there wasn't a StarCraft 2 Bourgeois either. Like, that never actually happened.
Really? So, MVP isn't considered one?
Nah, he wasn't. Even though he won a lot, people were like, it was very close because Nesty was so close to him that he wasn't Bourgeois. Like, I mean, that's some people said yes, he is, and some people said no. I think most people said no, but he and Nesty were, like, at the top, but they were at the top together, so he didn't get it.
Couldn't you make the same argument about Jadong with Flash?
I think Flash was much more dominant, personally. I think Jadong was very popular and had a ton of fans, and you know, I think was very, very good, and on his best day was close to Flash, but I think Flash just consistently getting the titles, as well as I think consistently outperforming Jadong, for me, was why Flash ended up getting it. And we also had Pro League at the time. You know, Pro League...
Yeah, that's true.
You had the individual league, and then you had a team league, and he was doing insanely well in both. So I think that was another
thing. I do wonder if, you know, how much Jadong's career was hurt by the fact that, you know, the whole Save Your Betting scandal collapsed Hua Sheng Oz, and then he was forced into Team 8. Like, he didn't have the same team support that Flash did on KT.
No, he definitely didn't. And, you know, moving into StarCraft 2, you know, Team 8 was it was a very weak team that didn't have a lot of, it just didn't have the same funding that the other Chaebol teams had. It was just kind of like a...
Right.
There need to be 8 teams in this league, so we will literally make this team that's called Kespa's 8th team to fill the slot situation.
Yeah. awkward. All right, guys.
That team became Jin Air Green Wings, by the way, just to just to bring it all back together.
And it was equally scuffed. that'll do it for us this week, guys. I'm sure you'll leave lots of comments below about the Bon Job. A very interesting conversation, especially with Wolf, who comes from StarCraft and who is one of the OG, you know, Korean casters here. So we will not be seeing you next week, guys. When the summer season starts, we will be back to talk more LCK. So it will be post MSI. We will see you then.